We are doubling down on stupid. This is profoundly reckless to the economy of the United States. It is profoundly reckless to the health of the United States. This has nothing to do with making America healthy again or wealthy again. Quite the contrary.
Right. But it has everything to do with keeping the fossil fuel companies wealthy. That's what's important here.
Well, I don't know why I came here tonight.
That's why.
I got the feeling that something ain't right.
It is not.
I'm so scared in case I fall off my chair. And I'm wondering how I'll get down the stairs. Clowns to the left of me, jokers to the right. Here I am, stuck in the middle with you.
Yes, I am. From Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles, this is The Bradcast, as heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in L.A., also in California in Red Bluff and Redding on KFOI and Round Mountains KKRN, up in Oregon on the Central Coast on KYAQ, Cottage Grove's Queso and Eugene's KEPW, Lanchester, Pennsylvania's W News, Maui, Hawaii's KAKU, in Columbus, Ohio on WGRN, Palinville, New York's WLPP, Rochester, New York's WRFZ, down in New Orleans on WHIV, out in Gallup, New Mexico, on KNIZ, Concord, New Hampshire's WNHN, Fayetteville, Arkansas's KPSQ, in Seattle on KODX, Richmond, Virginia's WRWK, Fairmont, West Virginia's WEFR, Janesville, Wisconsin's WADR, and Minneapolis, St. Paul's AM 950 KTNF. We also stream coast to coast and around the globe for you every day on the internets on the Progressive Voices Channel, Netroots Radio, Radio for Humans, NicoleSandler.com, Radio Free Brooklyn, No Lies Radio, Detour Talk, Delmarva FM, and most of your favorite podcast sites, blanketing planet Earth. Not that it needs a blanket. I'm Brad Friedman, your friendly investigative blogger, journalist, troublemaker, muckraker, an all-around swell fellow, says me from bradblog.com. Thank you very much for joining us today, because there is, as ever, yes, a whole lot going on in the news today, from Attorney General Pam Bondi under fire, hilariously, in the U.S. House Judiciary Committee, to new revelations regarding the Epstein files, to adjustments by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, finding that, oh, Donald Trump's first year of his second term was absolutely abysmal when it came to job creation, with an average of just 15,000 jobs added over each of the past 12 months. To more embarrassing failures for the Justice Department and the courts, including rebukes from federal judges and more rejections by federal grand juries, to the administration's ongoing weaponization of the DOJ, and a very weird shutdown of the airspace over the El Paso airport in Texas, on the border with Mexico, for 10 days by the FAA, that was just hours later ended entirely. I'll get to that in a second. But I want to make sure that we leave plenty of time here for coverage of an item in this week's news that, given all of the other Trump administration madness and attempts to distract and keep us from focusing on any one thing, they're good at that. But with all of that, I think that this story is unlikely to get the coverage that it warrants. Hopefully we can fix that a little bit here, especially since it's likely to affect the health and the lives of every single American, and arguably the lives of everyone on this planet, for generations to come. We will be joined momentarily by Dan Becker, named one of the world's 28 climate heroes a few years back, along with Al Gore and former NASA chief scientist James Hansen, to discuss, as you heard California Governor Gavin Newsom at the top of the show refer to there, what the New York Times is describing, Trump's allies are actually describing it as the New York Times says, a total victory for them, for Trump, for the fossil fuel industry, and a move that could wipe out decades of climate regulation with the reversal of the EPA's long-standing endangerment finding.
Yes, it's a total victory over science and over sanity.
And I know it's not as sexy as, you know, the shutting down the airport in El Paso or Pam Bondi getting yelled at and yelling back in the U.S. House, but it's really important. What is the endangerment finding? Why is it so critical that Trump's fossil fuel funded allies are already doing their victory dance this week? Well, we will explain it all for you when Dan joins us momentarily. Hi, Desi Doyen.
Hi.
I forgot to mention your name.
Yes, I'm here.
Oh, yeah, that's you. But first up, quickly, just a couple of the many items of note today. I want to hit one or two of them. The sudden and surprising airspace closure over El Paso, Texas on Wednesday. First announced as extending for 10 days, okay, but then lasting just a few hours. Reportedly, according to AP, it stemmed from the Pentagon's plans to test a laser to shoot down drones used by Mexican drug cartels. That, according to three people familiar with the situation who spoke on condition of anonymity with the Associated Press, that, they report, caused friction between the Pentagon and the Federal Aviation Administration, which wanted to ensure commercial air safety. Despite a meeting scheduled later this month to discuss the issue, the Pentagon, according to AP sources anyway, wanted to go ahead and suddenly test the laser, prompting the FAA to shutter the airspace over the city on the U.S.-Mexico border. It was not clear whether the laser was ultimately deployed at all or why the 10-day shutdown was quickly ended just hours after it was suddenly announced out of nowhere. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy said earlier that the airspace closed as the Defense Department and the FAA halted an incursion by Mexican cartel drones and that, quote, the threat has been neutralized. But drone incursions are not uncommon at all along the U.S.-Mexico border, so why all the fuss today? And it is unusual for a major airport to be shut down entirely, even for a short time, much less 10 days. That, according to a former chief security officer at United Airlines, officials will usually try to target security measures to isolate the risk if a specific plane or airline is threatened rather than shut down the entire airport. That, according to Rich Davis, a senior security advisor at a risk mitigation company, normal flights resumed in the morning after seven arrivals and seven departures were canceled. But even some medical evacuation flights had to be rerouted because of all of this, because all of this confusion and madness and chaos. U.S. Congresswoman Veronica Escobar, a Democrat whose district includes El Paso, said neither her office nor local officials received any advance notice of the closure. After it was lifted, she said that, quote, the information coming from the federal government does not add up. I agree with Veronica Escobar. She said at a news conference, I believe the FAA owes the community and the country an explanation as to why this happened so suddenly and abruptly and was lifted so suddenly and abruptly. Officials of the White House, the FAA, the Department of Transportation did not immediately respond to requests for comments about the dispute. The Pentagon said it had nothing to add to its statement that largely mirrored Duffy's statement. El Paso Mayor Reynard Johnson told reporters that he did not hear about the closure until after the alert was issued.
Wow.
Quote, decisions made without notice and coordination puts lives at risk and creates unnecessary danger and confusion, said Johnson. This was a major and unnecessary disruption, one that has not occurred since 9/11.
Wow.
I mean, if they're just wanted to use a laser, they're just testing a new weapon system or something. They couldn't tell anybody in advance. They couldn't tell the airport in advance. They couldn't tell the mayor. They couldn't tell the congressman. They couldn't that they were going to shut it down, not for an hour, But for 10 days?
Did
really?
It even occur to them to inform, to the Defense Department, to inform these people that are also having to deal with the FAA and airports?
Not to mention the customers, the people that are flying, who have tickets over the next 10 days.
I mean, it sounds like just weaponized mismanagement, but who knows? We'll hopefully find out.
Ask about the drone explanation provided by U.S. officials. Mexican President Claudia Sheinbaum said that she had no, quote, no information about the use of drones on the border. She noted that if U.S. authorities have more information, they should contact Mexico's government. Mexico, you may recall, is an ally of the U.S., at least it used to be, before Donald Trump came to town, and has treated them largely like an adversary at this point. So, yeah, as the Congresswoman says, something does not add up here still. There have been reports that, you know, the Defense Department wanted to test some new special laser weapon to shoot down drones, but for 10 days they wanted to test it without any advance notice to the airport until it was announced that it was to be closed for 10 days. Now, while I usually do not like to speculate on this program, something is still not being explained here. And I don't know what it is. I don't have any particular insight, but I'm just going to go ahead and stick my neck out here, lay a chip on the table, which I will emphasize may or may not be correct. But I have a feeling, we'll see if I'm right, with all of the very bad news coming out in the past few days about Trump and his close associates and cabinet members being in the Epstein files over and over again, well, that he might need another distraction. And guess what? A tidy little war against Mexican drug cartels, which, by the way, would be a war against Mexico itself. Well, that might fit the bill. And that maybe was in the offing when the airport very near Fort Bliss in Texas was suddenly shut down on Wednesday morning before someone maybe talked some sense into the president to, oh, I don't know, don't attack Mexico. As I say, totally speculation, but it sort of makes at least as much sense as the official claims so far.
Well, it's kind of disturbing that it makes sense, but that just seems to be the way things are in the Trump era.
Yeah, well, we will see in the days ahead if more comes out on this. But yeah, something don't add up there. And like I say, I think my explanation is as good as any. Anyway, more on that in the days ahead. But speaking of the Epstein files, the Attorney General of the United States of America, a woman by the name of Pam Bondi, she offered testimony, sort of, and answered questions, sort of, in the U.S. House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday. Let's check in on how that went, shall we? As she was asked by New York Congressman Jerry Nadler about the number of co-conspirators, as identified by the Department of Justice, co-conspirators to pedophile sex trafficker and longtime best friend of Donald Trump, Jeffrey Epstein, how many of those co-conspirators had actually been charged with any crimes?
How many of Epstein's co-conspirators have you indicted? How many perpetrators are you even investigating?
First, you showed it. I find it.
How many have you indicted?
Excuse me. I'm going to answer the question.
Answer my question.
No, I'm going to answer the question the way I want to answer the question.
No, you're going to answer the question the way I asked it.
Chairman Jordan, I'm not going to get in the gutter with these people, I'm going to answer the question.
How many have you indicted?
Again, the time belongs
to me. Claiming my time.
The time belongs to me.
I think it's very interesting.
Claiming my time.
I think it's very interesting.
You can reclaim your time.
He talks about they indicted. The president said they indicted him twice.
Mr. Chairman, please stop the clock and the clock
indicted.
And restore his time.
Okay, here we go with these
will be in order. The time belongs to the gentleman from New York. Clock, we will give you a few more seconds. We will do that. Reclaiming but when you ask a question, the witness gets to answer. You may not like the answer, but she gets to answer.
The question was, how many of Epstein's...
They don't like the answer, Chairman.
Reclaiming my time.
Because it's honest. So he asked a four-minute question.
Restore 45 seconds, Mr. Nadler, please, Mr. Chairman.
Answer.
I mean, you can let her filibuster all day long, but not on our watch. Reclaim. Not on our time. No way. Reclaim. And I told you about that, Attorney General, before you started.
You don't tell me.
Yeah, oh, I did tell you because we saw what you did in the Senate.
Lawyer, not even a lawyer.
Committee will be in order.
Time, and I should get back at least 45 seconds.
We will give you a few more seconds. I
not
said that already.
More, 45 seconds.
Okay, I will. I'm timing right now, Mr. Nadler.
All right.
Reclaiming my time. The answer to my question, how many of Epstein's co-conspirators has she indicted, is zero.
So that started off very well.
Yeah.
And then there was this bizarre exchange. It did not, spoiler, things did not get any better as the day went on. Once again, this is with the nation's top law enforcement official, Attorney General Pam Bondi, as she offered a very curious response to questions about the DOJ's unlawful failure to release all of the Epstein file documents, with only redactions of information identifying victims as opposed to the co-conspirators and others named in those files, including Donald Trump, who was reportedly cited more than 1 million times in those unredacted files.
He is the most transparent president in the nation's history. And none of them, ask Merrick Garland over the last 4 years one word about Jeffrey Epstein. How ironic is that? You know why? Because Donald Trump, the Dow right now is over, the Dow is over $50,000. I don't know why you're laughing. You're a great stock trader, as I hear, Raskin. The Dow is over 50,000 right now. The S&P at almost 7,000, and the NASDAQ smashing records. Americans' 401ks and retirement savings are booming. That's what we should be talking about. We should be talking about making Americans safe. We should be talking about, what does a Dow have to do with anything? That's what they just asked. Are you kidding?
Mr. Jordan, Mr. Jordan.
Committee will be in order.
Mr. Jordan, am I going to get an extra 45 seconds added to my time?
The committee will be in order. The time belongs to the gentleman from Texas. Ms. Bondi, the Attorney General, can respond.
Thank you. The Dow has shattered 50,000 for the first time. This is crazy. They said it couldn't be done in 4 years, yet President Trump has done it in 1 year.
You know what else is crazy? Donald Trump said those exact same words just a day or two ago during one of his interviews, exactly in that way. The other thing that's crazy is that is the Attorney General of the United States of America talking, claiming that we should be talking about how well the Dow is doing during her testimony.
Of the Attorney General.
Yeah, not the Secretary of the Treasury, not Secretary of Commerce. That was the Attorney General who really, really wanted to talk about the Dow being up over 50,000 for some weird reason. Also, by the way, she did not seem to raise the fact that there was only 15,000 jobs added per month over every month of the last year, the worst jobs record in years and years for any president. She also called Congressman Jamie Raskin, just called him Raskin. That's unusual for a congressional hearing. One more here. Here's a part of what Democratic lawmakers were actually trying to get to. There were about 10 or so of the more than 1,000 survivors of Jeffrey Epstein who were present in the hearing room on Wednesday, sitting just behind Attorney General Pam Bondi as she was questioned by Congresswoman Jayapal of Washington State.
To the survivors in the room, if you are willing, please stand.
About 10 of them, they all stand.
And if you are willing, please raise your hands if you have still not been able to meet with this Department of Justice.
And all of those women standing.
Please know for the record that every single survivor has raised their hand. Attorney General Bondi, you apologized to the survivors in your opening statement for what they went through at the hands of Jeffrey Epstein. Will you turn to them now and apologize for what your Department of Justice has put them through with the absolutely unacceptable release of the Epstein files and their information.
Congresswoman, you sat before Merrick Garland sat in this chair twice.
Attorney General
twice.
Bondi.
No, can I finish my answer?
No, I'm going to reclaim my time because I asked you
a specific question that I would like you to answer,
which is, will you turn to the survivors? This is not about anybody that came before you. It is about you taking responsibility for your Department of Justice and the harm that it has done to the survivors who are standing right behind you and are waiting for you to turn to them and apologize for what your Department of Justice has
done. Members get to ask the questions. The witness gets to answer in the way they want to answer it. Attorney General can
That's
respond.
Not accurate, Mr. Chairman.
Because she doesn't like the answer.
Time. So, Mr. Chairman,
why
I have asked
didn't she
question.
Ask Merrick Garland this twice?
I'm reclaiming my time,
my
and when I
will
reclaim
continue
my time,
to answer.
It
I'm
is
Mr. Chairman, the gentlelady has reclaimed
her
time.
I'm not going to get in the gutter for her theatrics.
The time belongs to the time belongs to the gentlelady. The gentlelady has 17 seconds.
Thank you. You're not going to answer this question, so let me just
Chairman,
say this.
I'll direct it to
what
you.
What a massive cover-up.
No, I'm answering a question.
Chairman, will you restore her time? The
I'm
witness is interrupting.
I'm not going to get in the gutter with this woman.
Stop the
She's
time.
She's doing theatrics.
And let me have my
the gentlelady,
time.
The gentlelady from Washington controls the time. The gentlelady has 17 seconds. You can proceed with your final
Thank you.
17 seconds.
What a massive cover-up this has been and continues to be. Donald Trump made the release of the Epstein files the center of his political campaign because he thought it would benefit him. Then you got into office, Attorney General, claimed to have a client list, only
Regular
to
order.
Then say that there was no list. Your deputy, Todd Blanche, met alone with Elaine Maxwell and transferred her to a minimum security prison. And now you continue
the
cover-up.
So there you go. Things are going very well in the U.S. House. That is our, I'm embarrassed to play it, but you need to hear it. That's our Attorney General right now. And apparently she is much beloved by the President of the United States, even when she behaves that way, perhaps especially when she behaves that way.
Exactly.
Just incredible. Okay, let's take a quick break here. We will come back with the story in this week's news that is, frankly, likely far more important to the nation and the world than anything that we have covered here to date, but that will almost certainly get far less attention than any of it, except, well, here on the broadcast, Dan Becker on the Trump administration ending the EPA's landmark endangerment finding, the regulation that allows just about all of the other ones when it comes to our worsening climate crisis. We'll talk about that straight ahead. I'm Brad Friedman, and this is The Bradcast.
What the public hears on the public airwaves matters. At The Bradcast, we do our best to bring you accurate news and analysis on the issues that actually matter, and we do it all independently, without corporate or political influence. But we can't do it without you, now more than ever. Please help us stay on your public airwaves by going to bradblog.com/donate to help keep us going. That's bradblog.com/donate. And thanks.
Change, 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 change.
Fools indeed. Welcome back to the broadcast. Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. Nearly 20 years ago now, back in 2007, during the George W. Bush administration, the U.S. Supreme Court handed down a major ruling in a case called Massachusetts versus EPA, a dispute over the mandates of the Clean Air Act, which was initially signed into law by President Lyndon B. Johnson before it was majorly strengthened by, of all presidents, Richard Nixon. The Supreme Court majority at the time in Massachusetts v. EPA held that, yes, greenhouse gases that may warm the atmosphere qualify as, quote, air pollutants under the Clean Air Act. With the justices finding that if the EPA determined that greenhouse gas emissions endanger public health by causing destructive climate change, then the EPA is obligated to regulate them under the Clean Air Act. The law, as written, gives them no choice but to do so. And then in December of 2007, under the Republican George W. Bush administration, the EPA went on to issue a draft of what was known as the EPA's endangerment finding, that greenhouse gases such as carbon dioxide did in fact pose a threat that endangered public health and therefore triggered the mandate to regulate them. But the Bush White House, led at the time by two oil men in George W. Bush and Dick Cheney, famously refused to open up the email from the EPA that contained that finding, which allowed them to claim that they had not actually received the document and therefore did not need to act on it. It would not be until 2009, after Barack Obama became president, that the White House would officially review the EPA's scientific endangerment finding, establishing the legal basis for sweeping federal regulations of climate warming emissions under the Clean Air Act. Since the endangerment finding was issued, the overwhelming scientific evidence has only become more robust. The overwhelming majority of scientists around the world agree that carbon dioxide, methane, and other greenhouse gases are dangerously heating the planet and supercharging storms and droughts and heat waves and sea level rise. Destructive, deadly, and costly extreme weather disasters that have grown in intensity, particularly over the past decade, when the past 11 years have been the 11 warmest years on record for the planet, according to the latest data from Copernicus, the European Union's climate change monitoring service. And yet, with all of that, we've got the news this week that after months of threats to do so, the Trump EPA is now planning to announce, well, never mind on that whole endangerment finding thing. Greenhouse gases aren't actually a threat to humanity after all. As the Rupert Murdoch-owned Wall Street Journal reported on Tuesday, the Trump administration is planning this week to repeal what they describe as the Obama-era scientific finding that serves as the legal basis for federal greenhouse gas regulation in the most far-reaching rollback of U.S. climate policy to date. And I will jump in here for a moment only to underscore and correct the Wall Street Journal that it was actually a George W. Bush era scientific finding, even if his administration refused to open that email from the EPA that contained it. Back to the journal here, the reversal targets the 2009 endangerment finding, which concluded that six greenhouse gases pose a threat to public health and welfare. The finding provided the legal underpinning for the EPA's climate rules, which limited emissions from power plants and tightened fuel economy standards for vehicles under the Clean Air Act. Donald Trump's EPA administrator, Lee Zeldin, said proudly in an interview this week, the quote, "This amounts to the largest act of deregulation in the history of the United States." And while I don't usually like to quote Trump administration officials who lie like they breathe, that point, at least from Zeldin, I believe, is almost certainly true. If, in fact, this effort withstands judicial scrutiny against a mountain of lawsuits that are almost certain to follow the administration's announcement, which is now set for Thursday. The final rule reportedly removes the regulatory requirements to measure, report, certify, and comply with federal greenhouse gas emission standards for motor vehicles and repeals associated compliance programs, credit provisions, and reporting obligations for industries. The move will be seen as a huge victory for the fossil fuel industry, which for years has pushed back against any and all federal climate regulations. Administration officials, according to the Wall Street Journal, said the rollback would equate to more than $1 trillion in regulation cuts, though they did not provide details on how they actually came up with that number. They also claimed that rescinding the finding would result in an average per vehicle cost savings of more than $2,400, which I will ask my guest about, who happens to be an expert in such things. He'll join us momentarily with much more. The Environmental Defense Fund, a nonprofit advocacy group, has said that rolling back the endangerment finding would, quote, eliminate some of our most vital tools to protect people from the pollution that causes climate change. The group said the administration was trying to steer Americans towards dirtier, more dangerous, and more destructive air. The EPA has pinned many of the arguments in its preliminary rule that would reverse the finding on a report commissioned by Trump Energy Secretary and former fracking CEO Chris Wright that was written for the administration by five longtime climate science deniers. A judge ruled just last month that Secretary Wright and the Energy Department violated transparency laws in the way that it formed and operated that working group. Nonetheless, despite reported worries from the administration that their report might ultimately fail to uphold their new finding, they appear to be ready to move forward with it this week nonetheless. In their pushback against the EPA's draft rule, science groups took particular aim at the DOE report, which described increased carbon dioxide in the atmosphere as having a, quote, greening benefit for the planet. The American Geophysical Union, a nonprofit scientific society, said, however, the report presented inaccurate and cherry-picked information. The National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine issued its own report about the original endangerment finding, concluding that it was, in fact, accurate and has stood the test of time. The right-wing fossil-fueled think tank called the Heartland Institute, however, applauded the coming change, arguing, quote, the Obama administration's determination that CO2 endangered human health and welfare was scientifically flawed and blatant political pandering. Though, again, as previously detailed, it was originally the George W. Bush administration acting on a ruling by the conservative Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia that led to the initial determination. In a statement issued on Wednesday, Dan Becker, the center of the Center for Biological Diversity, observed, quote, the EPA is killing the biggest single step that any nation has taken to save oil, save consumers money at the pump, and combat global warming. He said American families will suffer long-term harms so that giant auto and oil companies can pocket short-term profits. They are popping champagne corks at the EPA and GM headquarters, he said, but also in Beijing, where Chinese auto, EV automakers will face no competition from the U.S. to dominate the world's clean car market. Joining us now is Dan Becker, director of the Safe Climate Transport Campaign at the Climate Law Institute of the nonprofit Center for Biological Diversity. Dan developed the strategy and led the fight for the biggest single step any nation has taken to fight global warming, the Obama administration's groundbreaking program that has begun to cut in half emissions from cars, SUVs, and pickup trucks. Dan was previously named by Rolling Stone magazine and Salon as one of the world's 28 climate heroes, along with Al Gore and former NASA chief scientist James Hansen. Oh, Dan Becker, welcome back to the broadcast, sir.
Thanks for having me back. I'm glad to be here.
Before we get into some of the specifics here, what happens next? Talk about what a worst case legal scenario would mean, generally speaking. How big of a deal is this? How much of an effect, if the endangerment finding is ultimately reversed, would this have on climate regulations as a whole across the government and on the climate itself if this effort is not somehow blocked by the courts?
Well, it's huge. But the endangerment finding itself is really only a doorway. It's the door to the closet that opens up to the choices that an administration can make to take individual action. And unfortunately, what the Trump folks are going to do is not only revoke the endangerment finding, but they're going to repeal the biggest single step, as you said, that any nation has ever taken that used the Clean Air Act as the mechanism to cut pollution from cars. The U.S. is the biggest historic global warming polluter. Mm-hmm. It's the largest current global warming polluter because China has superseded us. And cars are the biggest problem, the biggest source of emissions in the United States. And the biggest solution that we could take is to dramatically reduce their pollution. And so that's what Trump is going after. The endangerment finding makes it easier for an administration to take action and will make it, and the revocation of that will make it more difficult for a future administration to take action. But we'll still be able to act on global warming. It's just going to be much harder to do.
You describe in your statement on this, you describe this decision as lawless. You say it was pre-cooked to benefit polluters. I understand how it was pre-cooked to benefit polluters. What makes it lawless? Doesn't any EPA have the legal authority to come out with their own findings about what is dangerous and what is not?
What EPA can't do is make up the science. And as you pointed out, Chris Wright, the Energy Secretary, had a cherry-picked group of five horsemen of the apocalypse, doubter, denier scientists, who made up a bunch of horse hockey about global warming and then said, we're going to base policy on that. I actually think that it isn't certain that that is what the announcement is going to be based on, because it was so roundly debunked. So I think what the administration is going to do is just say, you know, global warming isn't that big a problem. And we don't have the power to control it. We don't have the power to cut emissions because the previous administrations misread the Clean Air Act. When the Clean Air Act said that the EPA shall reduce any pollutant that poses a threat to health and welfare, they didn't really mean carbon. They meant some other set of pollutants that we don't recognize either.
Wouldn't they be in contradiction of the U.S. Supreme Court if they made that? If they tried to make that claim,
they would indeed. And in that famous case of Massachusetts versus EPA, was that the statute, the Clean Air Act, was absolutely clear that this interpretation is correct. That when there is a pollutant that poses a threat to health and welfare, EPA must act. And so that's what they're trying to go after. And the pre-cooked aspect of this is, first of all, that the oil and auto industry, which dramatically enriched the Trump administration's campaign coffers, the oil industry alone contributed $445 million. And Trump said, if you give me $1 billion, I'll do anything you want.
Yes.
This is the anything you want.
Yep.
And they're getting it wholesale.
Yeah.
But the other aspect of it is that this was all pre-cooked, written out, and the menu laid by the Heritage Foundation, which is also funded by the oil industry. And the provisions in the Project 2025, which was their menu for what the next Republican administration should do, was drafted in large part by the guy who is running the Trump administration, OMB, or Office of Management and Budget in the White House, which has set the table and ordered the rules that are about to be issued.
They told us all of this was coming. We knew that this was coming. They've been threatening it. I guess the only thing we didn't know is what sort of justifications were they going to gin up to try to overcome the inevitable court challenges that will come, that I hope come? I'd love, Dan Becker, to get your response here, speaking of the justifications the administration seems to be cooking up here. Your response to Interior Secretary Doug Burgum. He was, I'll play this clip. He was speaking on Fox News this morning in advance of the administration's expected announcement on Thursday, rolling back the endangerment finding, talking about the dangers, or in his case, the lack thereof, of unregulated carbon emissions.
And with the endangerment finding, you know, coal, beautiful clean coal, if there's a coal plant running in America, it's clean, because the only thing left would be the CO2, but CO2 was never a pollutant. When we breathe, we emit CO2. Plants need CO2 to survive and grow. They thrive with more CO2. So this whole endangerment thing opens up the opportunity for the revival of clean, beautiful American coal.
So there you go. The only thing to worry about with coal is the carbon dioxide. But hey, it's not a pollutant. Plants need it. They love it. The more CO2, the better, apparently. That seems to be the administration's line at this point. Your response to that, Dan Becker?
It flies in the face of science, and it flies in the face of the judgments of the world's leading scientists and also the Supreme Court of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
So the reality here is that, I would be honored if Secretary Burgum would enter a chamber with just CO2 in it for an hour or so.
Yes, it's not a pollutant. What do you worry about? Yes, exactly.
It might even just take 10 minutes.
Yeah.
So the reality here is that the administration is making up science. They're tearing up the facts and trying to advance their cronies in the interests of their cronies in the oil and gas and auto industry over those of the American people. All you have to do to believe that there is an endangerment here is look out the window in most parts of the United States.
Mm-hmm.
There are more severe storms, more severe floods, more severe droughts, more severe wildfires as a result of the global warming pollution that spews from our tailpipes and smokestacks. And you don't believe me. These are the judgments of the world's leading scientists and our own EPA and other agencies.
And of course, the endangerment finding does not only find CO2 to be a danger to human health, even if they wish to pretend that plants love it and there's no problem. By the way, a pollutant is not based, you know, it's based on how much of it you're exposed to. Water, we need water to live every day. But I suspect if, once again, the Interior Secretary drank 3 or 4 gallons of it at once, he would find himself in the hospital pretty quickly. But even if you set aside concerns about CO2, there are other gases, methane, nitrous oxide, other pollutants that would also, if I'm understanding this correctly, be allowed to go unregulated by the federal government as well if this rule moves forward, correct?
I think that's right. That's certainly what they have in mind. But carbon dioxide is the main global warming polluter, and it's the one that they're focused on because it's the one that comes primarily from the burning of fossil fuels.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, again, the fossil fuel industry that is really behind this and has been stoking the fires under Mr. Trump to get moving and act in their interest.
So what are your fears, Dan Becker, if this, in fact, does move forward, if it overcomes legal challenges that I think will definitely be coming? You work in the transportation sector, specifically at the Center for Biological Diversity's Safe Climate Transport Campaign. How might this rule have a direct, specific effect on emissions in the transportation sector? What human health and other dangers come with that, as you see it? And hey, will it really save consumers $2,400 on new car sales, as the administration claims?
Well, let me deal with that one first.
Okay.
No, it won't. Yes, by having old, antiquated technology on cars, buyers would save a little bit up front, and I'll even give them the $2,400 estimate that they've got out there, which they don't back up. But they're omitting the fact that consumers, when they use a cleaner vehicle, a more efficient vehicle, save at the gas pump. And in fact, they save 3 times that $2,300 at mm-hmm. the gas pump.
Mm-hmm.
This is an administration that claims to owe its election to people concerned about costs. They're only jacking up people's costs at the gas pump.
Mm.
And the net cost of buying a vehicle that is inefficient versus one that's efficient is several thousand dollars.
And as to the direct effect of this, both on human health, as you see it, and on the industry itself, you mentioned in your statement from the Center for Biological Diversity on all of this that This is really a gift to China, is it not?
It is. So first of all, this is going to make kids sicker because there will be more air pollution. Kids with asthma will have more frequent asthma attacks. They'll miss more school. Their parents, who will have to stay home to take care of them, will miss more work. People with lung disease will suffer and some will die. People with heart disease will also have increased early deaths. So this is bad for people. It's good for China. And it's good for China because the Chinese auto industry wants to make a market in clean vehicles. Mm-hmm. And if they have no competition from the United States automakers, because the U.S. automakers are going to make gas guzzlers as a result of not being required to make clean vehicles, then the Chinese manufacturers will win.
Yep.
And that isn't really good for American workers. It's not really good for American profits. GM will become BYD over time. BYD yep. is the biggest Chinese electric vehicle maker, and they're laughing all the way to the bank as Trump does what General Motors told him to do.
Yeah, and I believe in January, as we reported on our Green News report a week or so ago, in fact, BYD, for the first time, has outsold Tesla in the European Union. So BYD is making headway in the EV market, and we are not. Now, Dan, we're out here in California, where the Trump administration has been fighting the state's ability to issue its own regulations to limit emissions by cars, for example. In the absence of federal regulations, if they end up gutting these, as they seem to be promising now, will states then be, will we be able to issue our own emissions requirements out here in California if the federal ones go away?
Unclear, but probably. It depends upon how they phrase what they do tomorrow and whether they try to preclude the states from acting. Mm. But the states can demand that they be allowed to protect the lungs of their people when the federal government declines to do so and can adopt clean car rules on their own. It will ultimately be decided by the Supreme Court because the auto companies and the oil companies will doubtless sue to prevent states from acting to protect their own people. But the states will be able to fight back, and we'll see what happens when we get to the Supreme Court in a couple of years. The states need to act, because right now the federal government doesn't have their backs and is only blowing smoke in their faces.
And I think the Supreme Court would have to overrule itself on some of these questions if they wanted to support the administration here. Wall Street Journal reports that California has previously asserted that if greenhouse gas emissions do not fall under the federal purview, then then the state does not need approval from the EPA to regulate tailpipe emissions. The state is the largest car market in the U.S., so when California puts restrictions, regulations on emissions, that affects the entire U.S. car market. Could this move ultimately, Dan, and I guess ironically, actually end up helping to improve fuel efficiency and result in more restrictions on carbon emissions, at least in the transportation sector, if it goes forward as sort of an unintended consequence of all of this?
Well, it's a little bit like the dog that caught the car. What does it do with it now that it's got it?
Right.
So the Trump administration has caught these clean car rules and they're tearing them up. Do they then empower the states to take the action that they haven't been able to take while EPA was preempting this field by having reasonable standards that the Trump administration is going to tear up? So we'll have to see how that goes. It will ultimately, as I said, be decided by the Supreme Court. But yes, states need to protect their people, and they should begin the process of doing so. They can adopt clean car rules tomorrow, mm-hmm. and we'll see what happens.
Now, after the administration announces this new rule, you know, what happened? I mean, they'll be reversing the endangerment finding, but there's a whole bunch of rules, regulations, and so forth that are based on that. Those don't immediately go away, right? There's time that it will be taken by the agencies to essentially write new rules to reverse and replace the old regulations. How will that even work?
Well, the first thing that they're doing is tearing up the clean car rules, as we've talked about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the biggest protection that is going to be eviscerated as they kill the endangerment finding.
Can they just do that immediately? Doesn't have to go through like a public comment process and all of that stuff?
It has just. So they finished reading the many thousands, tens of thousands of comments, and they are unchanged in their view. They're still going to go and tear up these clean car rules and let the kids with asthma suffer. Then we sue, and others will sue. The states will sue. Some of the health agencies and health advocacy groups will sue. They'll all be coordinated in one case, consolidated by the D.C. Circuit, which is where all cases against the EPA end up. Mm-hmm. And then we'll see what they decide. Hoping that we win, it will then be appealed by the bad guys up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court will have to make a judgment as to whether they believe that it's important to either stand by decisions that have already been made for the predictability of the law, or whether they believe that states should, as they often said, have more power than the federal government to protect their people if they want to, or not if they don't. We'll see whether they say, no, if they want to, they can, which may be where Mr. Alito and others want to go.
Can regulations that have been dismantled, if they are, in fact, able to dismantle this, if it stands up to court scrutiny and so forth, regulations dismantled under this administration, can they then be easily restored again under a new legitimate administration in the future? Does this prevent future administrations in some way from, you know, simply being able to reverse what they're doing here?
Well, they're trying to do that. That's why they're going after the endangerment finding and not just saying we're rethinking the way we regulate cars.
Can a new EPA simply come out with a new endangerment finding? We'll just keep going back and forth on this?
It will end up in court, and the Supreme Court will have an opinion on that. Mm-hmm. And it may not be the one that we would like. Your question was, can they do it easily? And the clear answer is no, not easily. Maybe we can do it. Maybe it's going to take a few years to try to build back and recover some of the protections that Trump is eviscerating. It can't be done easily, and we'll find out from the Supreme Court whether it can be done at all.
Finally, I suspect that many people listening to all of this are, or at least should be, wildly alarmed. But if so, what can actually be done about it? You know, we've talked about, you know, go to the site, the EPA, register your thoughts, your comments on these various regulations people do. And as you note, the EPA simply ignores those. Ultimately, they may come back and be very useful in a court challenge. But, you know, when you hear about this, is there anything that we, the people, can actually do at this point to counter this madness?
There are some things. Speak out. Make your body... allow your body to be counted when there's a protest near you, whether it's a No Kings or other kind of protest. Stand up and be counted. Write letters to the editor of your local paper, excoriating what's happening and explaining to people who may not understand why it's a problem for you as an individual, why you object to these threats to your kids and their health. Be sure to vote. That's how we got where we are. And it's how we can get out of where we are. Write to your members of Congress and tell them that you object to what the president is doing in this or that regard. They will read it. They may not agree with it. They may not vote the way you want them to vote, but it all gets counted in their office. And mm-hmm. in some cases, it weighs on them to do the right thing. In many cases, it does not.
I will add, it also does not hurt to support institutions, nonprofit institutions like the Center for Biological Diversity, where Dan Becker is the director of the Safe Climate Transport Campaign at the Climate Law Institute there. You can get more information on their work at safeclimatecampaign.org, and you can follow them on the blue skies at safe-climatecampaign.org. climate. Dan, always a pleasure speaking with you, always enlightening, and I suspect we'll be shouting to you in the very near future, depending on what we see in the next few days. Thank you, sir.
I'm grateful. Thank you.
All righty, then. I hope everyone's prepared for that, because this is a big deal.
Yes.
And again, I'm sure it'll get coverage, you know, for an hour or two on the day that it happens.
But the magnitude of it probably won't get the right kind of coverage to let Americans know what is happening. And this has been...
And who to blame for it.
Yes. Yeah. And this has been a decades-long effort by the oil industry and Republicans to make sure that they are not held accountable for the pollution and the climate change that they are causing. I mean... You know, this is the oil empire striking back.
Yep.
And one thing I think is really important to remember, you can repeal the endangerment finding, but you can't repeal the endangerment. Climate change is here, and it is costing us dearly now.
Because the endangerment is real.
Yes.
Depending, you know, no matter what they're going to come out, what kind of crap and nonsense they're going to say, oh, CO2 is good. It gives us extra plants.
They're, you know, recycling old climate science denier talking points. We got a long road ahead to clean this up.
And by the way, Dan Becker is right when he says pay attention to elections as they're coming up. Remember to vote. And how important is that? Well, while I was talking to Dan there, the this just in, U.S. House votes to end Canada tariffs in a rare bipartisan rebuke of Donald Trump. Lawmakers voted 219 to 211 in favor of a resolution to terminate Trump's use of a national emergency that doesn't exist to put punitive trade measures on Canadian goods, as six Republicans joined all but one Democrat in favor. I know it's only six, but it was enough to get this thing passed, 219 to 211. The even though Republicans still hold the majority, 218 to 214, the resolution, Reuters notes, stands a good chance of passage in the U.S. Senate, which has voted twice now to block Trump from imposing tariffs on Canada, who has threatened a 100% tariff against Canada if they make any sort of a trade deal with China, even though just days before Trump made that threat, he told Canada, hey, they should make a deal with China. Anyway, so it very well may pass in the Senate, but it would have to be signed by the president, or the veto would need to be...
a veto-proof majority.
Two-thirds in each chamber would be required for that. So we'll see. But hey, keep voting. Got some big elections coming up this year, I understand. Anyway... Got to get out. Thanks to, again, to Dan Becker of the Center for Biological Diversity. Thanks to our producer, Desi Doyen. And thanks to all of you for spending a portion of your day or night with us. If you missed any portion of today's show, or you'd like to share it with someone you know, love, or hate, you can do so for free anytime at bradblog.com. Download the show there, share it as you like. And hey, while you're there, please consider hitting a donate button to help us stay on your public airwaves, especially right now. You can also go straight to bradblog.com/donate. We rely on you 100% to do what we do, whatever it is we do, every day over your public airwaves. Drop me email if you like. I'm bradcast@bradblog.com, and on social medias, especially Blue Sky, you'll find me at The Brad Blog. We will see you there. Until we see you here next time, I think with Digby and Driftglass.
Yes.
All right. We'll see you then. And at all of the above, I'm Brad Friedman. Good luck, world. You're listening to The Bradcast. We are 100% listener-supported, thanks to listeners like you who stop by bradblog.com/donate.